In a time of great change, we're all making efforts to become more ethical, more educated people. The Transaction Podcast interviews guests from many different backgrounds to bring diverse aspects of the human experience to life through humour, authenticity, and personal stories. We are privileged to get a glimpse into other people's realities and to get first-hand advice and information from people on the front line of great social change. I'm Harris Eddie Hill, an out and proud trans non-binary person, an inclusive mental health coach and a best-selling author, and this is the Transaction Podcast. Hey everyone and welcome back. Today I'm joined by Maida Murtar. Hey Maida.
Hey. Hi everyone.
I have guested on Maida's podcast many times now, and I finally managed to get her on mine. And Maida, do you want to tell us a little bit about what you do on your podcast? It's pretty interesting.
It is interesting. So I have two parts of my podcast. One is where I share my personal evolution and the practicalities of trying to like live a spiritual life in the practical physical 3D world. And the other part of it is I channel a collective called Auron. So people come on and ask Auron questions. So if people aren't too sure about channeling, if you've heard of Abraham Hicks, it's really similar to that. But it's basically like a really kind of expanded energy and consciousness, really big picture perspective. And I don't, like, it's not, they're not asking me, they're asking Auron. So I sort of step back and get to listen and be a witness, and that the information comes through and I get to listen back, and it blows my mind just as much as it blows the guests of the audience's mind, which is pretty fun.
Yeah, it's so cool. A guest and another sort of podcasty friend of yours, Esther, is who introduced me to you. And when she said you can go on and ask a question, I was like, oh, I've never got to do that before. I've listened to the Abraham Hicks stuff for ages. You know, I love it, and I love it as a concept, but I was like, it doesn't quite capture the whole thing for me. Like, it seems a little, it's kind of, I feel like it's a bit too focused on just like one aspect of kind of being like a, you know, an energetic being. What's your take on that? Like, it, you know, compared to channeling Auron, like, how does it feel different to you?
So this is so interesting. I don't know if you know, but in 2 weeks, I'm going on an Esther Hicks, Abraham Hicks cruise to New Zealand.
Amazing.
In 2 weeks. Yeah. So I first came across them, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago. And I will say, addicted. Like, I would start my morning every morning for years listening to them. And it was so uplifting. And I just adored it. And then I don't know what happened, but it's like their energy dropped off for me. Like, I wasn't called to them. I wasn't called to listening to them or anything. And then out of nowhere, 3 years ago, I saw this cruise being advertised and something came up and I went, oh, I think I might want to go on that. So I booked it, COVID. So 3 years later, now it's coming up. And for a while I was like, do I really even want to go? Like, I'm not actually that excited about the workshop a bit. I'm more kind of excited about the cruise bit, but it felt like a definite yes to keep it going. So that'll be fun and exciting. I haven't heard them for years, so I don't know what stuff they're even talking about now. But I agree with you with what you said. I feel like it's like Abraham Hicks and Auron are a similar energy, but a bit of what they say is slightly different. So from my version of hearing Abraham Hicks, they talk a lot about like focusing on the positive and expanding the good feeling and not focusing on the bad things. And, you know, if you've got one thing going well in your life, the other stuff will sort itself out. So focus on the good thing. And that's quite different to what Auron say. So Auron say that like our energy system, our consciousness is always attempting to heal, to expand, to grow, to evolve. And if a negative, as we perceive it, emotion comes up, it's for a reason. It's because that thing is ready to be looked at, to be acknowledged, to be healed, to be transmuted. And so they say, rather than, you know, just ignoring all the bad and focusing on all the good, focus on the good when you feel good, fantastic, awesome. But the moment something comes up, it's like a little energy pocket or a little part of us going, oh, hello, I'm actually not a match to all of that beautiful, delicious stuff that you've got. And so can you help me? So like if we've got like a beautiful dream and we're feeling excited about it and then some fear comes up, my understanding of what Abraham says would be, don't worry about the fear and just focus on your dream. Whereas what I hear Auron say, it's like, love the dream, but also acknowledge the part of you that is feeling fear or doubt and address those concerns and those needs. Because every pocket of us has got like wisdom and gold. And when we don't pay attention to them, when we kind of turn away from them, we disconnect from the power and the energy and the wisdom in that. So that's how I feel like they're different to Abraham.
Yeah, 100%. And I really like, you know, I feel I was kind of addicted and really leaning on the Abraham Hicks stuff at times when I was doing a lot of avoiding and trying to control, you know, my reality and avoiding, you know, the very real situations that were facing me. And it really led me into like not a good place. I'm not blaming them. It's just, yeah. I'm saying that I used a lot of that stuff to kind of feed my less than well-rounded behavior and what, and it ended up manifesting in a big breakdown. You know, and at the time it was really unpleasant. Over time I've begun to also really value that breakdown and like how I've actually grown out. You know, I felt like I fell apart to come back together again, and it's been really positive ultimately. But in healing from that breakdown, I've vibed so much more with like Auron and you know, your channeling and the way of being like this whole idea that there are bad feelings and good feelings is just total bollocks. And it's something I've really incorporated into my own sort of healing practices. And, you know, I'm in the healing professions as well, so I'm helping a lot of my patients at the moment to address those negative feelings. And just this idea that I feel like listening to you and Auron has brought, it's just this idea that actually those aspects, I kind of knew this in theory, but I've really practiced it and listened so much to you talking about this and demonstrating it. And it's amazing how, what a difference it makes to people just to go there, just to ask the question. You know, I had a patient start with me a little while ago in my job, and she was talking about anxiety, and I said, what do you think the anxiety wants to tell you? And the look on her face, I mean, I could tell she really wanted to swear. Like it was anger. Her instant thing was anger. And like, I could just feel from her that she didn't want to go there. She didn't want to find out what the fucking anxiety had to say. You know, she was instantly so pissed off about the whole thing. And she was so angry at her anxiety. And I was like, wow, that's powerful. But since I've started to utilize this for myself, for other people I know, and for my patients, it's been like revolutionary, even though it seems so simple.
Yeah, I think it's life-changing, and I think it's simple, and I think it's widely misunderstood. Like, I think you can have a lot of conversations with conscious people who are doing personal development, who will in conversation acknowledge that, yes, of course, all human emotions matter and they're all valuable. But in the practical heat of living, the truth is that those shitty emotions feel shitty and we don't enjoy feeling shitty. But even deeper than that, I feel like a part of us inside of us knows that in theory, we're supposed to feel good, which is why I think the things that don't feel good tend to feel wrong to us, like bad to us, and we sort of shut down from them. But what I've discovered with this work, with myself, with clients, with all that sort of stuff, is that you can't just disconnect from the negative emotions without dulling the good ones. But deeper than that, you can't walk around feeling safe and worthy and valuable and loved in the world if what you're telling the parts of you who are feeling the bad things is that you're not going to listen to them, they're stupid, they're bad, they're dumb, they should just go away and leave you the fuck alone. Because the message we give to any part of us is the message we're giving to all of us. So most of us are walking around rejecting our feelings, rejecting our thoughts. I shouldn't feel like that. I shouldn't think like that. They didn't mean that. Trying to talk ourselves out of, you know, our emotions, our energetics and stuff. And what that does is it splits our energy, divides us against ourselves. And this is, I think, mostly misunderstood. You can't do that and be wildly connected to your own wisdom and intuition. Because those little pockets of energy have got wisdom in them. They've got power in them. And there's something that needs to be kind of shifted or transmuted and looked at. And when you connect to those aspects of you with actual acceptance, with actual love, the gifts they give you are like extraordinary. They're like the missing piece to the path that we want to walk to all the things that, you know, are calling us. But when we reject them, we end up walking around in circles and thinking that everyone's powerful except for us because we can't manifest the things that we want, even though we're trying. And it's exhausting.
100%. How long have you been doing channeling now?
I actually haven't really kept track. I'm not one of those people who remembers dates and times and stuff. So I'm going to intuitively say 4 years.
Okay.
That may be accurate.
And how has, I mean, obviously you mentioned before that because you're stepping back and you're observing what Aura are saying, you're getting to witness what they're saying as well. So how has being in this situation like benefited you overall? Like, do you live
It's
very differently?
benefited me enormously, but I want to emphasize this. I think what's benefited me the most is that I re-listen to the material over and over and over and over again. So I don't think that all of the transformation I've had in my world since they entered is because I channel them. I think it's because I'm really open to their message and I action it in my life. So, like, for example, when I used to look at Esther, I used to think Esther was so lucky and blessed and blah, blah, blah. And yeah, that's true. She is, right? But so are we all. And so I don't want to present it as though it's the fact that they flow through me that has created the healing, because you can have energetics move through you. And if you go back to your same bullshit the moment that stops, then you're just stuck in your own bullshit. So we all, create the shape changes and the shifts inside of ourselves. But I genuinely believe that the biggest profound transformation in me has come from listening to the podcast over and over again, because they're multi-levels and multi-layers, and they've also got energy healing in them, and then actioning it. Like, not just having it as a thing that I think about and I think is a good idea. Like, I actually put the stuff into action in my life, and that has been deeply, deeply transformative. I do have the beautiful feeling when they flow through me of like my heart feels so much unconditional love, which is like extraordinarily beautiful. So that does feel like a blessing, but I really honestly think that it's the enacting the stuff that has been the most impactful for me.
That's cool. So really, you're approaching this as a listener.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I often can't remember my conversations, so I also appreciate my podcast as a listener, and I get the joy of having the conversation, and then I get the joy of listening to it almost like it's for the first time and I've never heard it before.
Yeah. I feel like that too. So with the aura and stuff, when I've channeled, the moment it's over, it's like it all falls out of my head. So I have like a vague sense of what we talked about. And so I usually have a chat with a guest after Auron leaves. So me, Mate, or I have a chat with them. And then when they say stuff, I go, oh yeah, it's like it puts me back in the energy of it. But generally it just all falls out of my head. And it happens to most of the guests, and a lot of the people who actually listen to the podcast say the same thing. It's like you can't retain it all. It's not possible. And I feel like when I listen to it, it's like my mind has to stretch and then it goes back slightly less than what it originally went back. So it's like a gradual process of extending the consciousness with every listen.
Yeah, that's cool. How did you get into channeling?
I was an energy healer for about 12, 13 years before I started channeling, and I didn't realize that that was like the perfect training ground, because I would intuit all sorts of things about people, and I learned to just say whatever was coming out of like whatever came. I learned to not edit it and just trust it. And I had so many experiences like, oh my God, how could you know that? That's amazing. But so it reinforced that what's coming through is like pure. So I did that for like a really, really, really long time. And it got to the point where I never questioned a single thing. Like, I just, whatever came, I didn't go, should I tell them this? It was just blip. So that was kind of the perfect training ground, because to be a voice channel, you've got to be willing to open your mouth and talk without knowing really what you're going to say or how it's going to connect to other things. And sometimes they say some, controversial things. So the degree of kind of trust, allowing and surrender that you need to be a voice channel in that way. It took me a long time to build, and I think it was my healing practice and like my spiritual enaction, like in things that I'd enact as well. But their healing really trained me in that process of being open to the energy, receiving it, trusting it, and speaking it. And then gradually, like not gradually, actually, one day out of nowhere, I channeled for the first time without knowing what the fuck was going on.
So it was totally an organic experience.
Yeah, I was having massages once a week. A friend of mine was giving me massages at my house once a week. And so I'd been trained in, you know, at 2 o'clock every Wednesday, I would lie in the massage bed and just relax and allow and let go. And one time, she's one of my really close friends. And one Wednesday, I lay on the bed and I felt like my head was different. I felt like all of a sudden I could answer any question about the nature of life and the universe. And I don't walk around normally feeling like that. So I said to my friend, hey, just humor me. I feel like this. Can you just ask me any question about the nature of life and the universe? And she goes, she said something like, why do we struggle to love ourselves so much? Which was like a brilliant question. And I knew, I don't know how I knew, but I knew that I wasn't to try and think of an answer. I somehow knew that I had to just open my mouth and go, bleh, and let whatever come out, come out. And what came out was bloody, like, extraordinarily amazing. And like, my jaw was on the floor, but I knew I had to not be tense in listening. And so I wasn't, which was great. I don't know how the hell I knew how to do that, but I did. And then at the end of it, my friend and I were like, what the fuck was that? Like, what? And then every Tuesday for the next 3 or 4 weeks, we'd just set up the tape recorder in case it happened, and it did. And it was a couple of years later that Oren actually said it wasn't a coincidence that the first time we came through that way is at the time where Maida had trained herself to completely relax and let go.
Wow.
Mm.
What did you think about it?
I think I genuinely didn't have thoughts. It's like my brain couldn't compute. And I really was like, what the fucking fuck? Like that, like what? That was awesome. I loved it. And I was like, I wonder if that's a thing I can do now. Who knows? I guess we'll see. But I could feel the quality of the truth of it. And it gave me perspectives I hadn't thought about in that way before. So I knew it was good. I knew it was like delicious coming through me. So I had no fear when I was like, what the fuck is that? It wasn't like, oh my God. It was like, oh wow, you know, cool. What is it? But it took me a while to start to really understand it. So then I'd kind of, once I started to understand that I could do it consciously, like I could decide to sit and not just have to wait for it to come by grace. Then I started asking questions. And then they kind of started, I feel like I was doing an apprenticeship. So I'd sit to do a channeling and then I'd listen back and they were like, notice how right now in your channel, the left side is a bit blocked and the right isn't. So notice how if you do this, it expands. So they were like training me on how to channel, which was super cool.
Wow.
Mm.
So do you think that because you were doing energy healing before that, it made you open-minded enough to kind of go with it when it happened?
Yeah, I have been training myself to follow my wisdom and my intuition for like a couple of decades now. Like I've really built that muscle. I'm really good at if I get the feeling of doing a thing, that means I'm doing the thing. It's almost like I don't decide things now. I discover what feels right inside of me instead. And I've been building that up in myself consciously and on purpose for a really long time. So then when that came, there was no question. Like there's no... like it felt right, it felt good, that's good enough for me. Mm. So there was no like consideration of shutting down to wisdom.
Yeah. Mm. And have you always been like that, or was there like a turning point where you, because I know that for me, I know that I was intuitive as a kid and I clearly remember a whole lot of that, but I feel like I got to a certain age and I became socially aware enough to understand that what I was doing was weird and no one else was doing it. And if I observe someone else who was doing something a bit intuitive or different, the reaction that that would have. So I shut it down for a long time. I was like, oh, no, you know, I can't do that. This is rubbish. And I would just kind of repeat what other people were saying about stuff like that. And then when I was 19 and I moved out of home, it hit me like a ton of bricks. I started saying things and intuiting things before I was even aware that I was saying it. And then it kind of started to come out then, but it was such a difficult thing to get my head around when I spent so many years practicing this real kind of like demeaning attitude towards spiritual or other or weird things.
I didn't have that. I never had like judgment or thinking it's, you know, too weird or anything like that, but what I did have was a really fucking challenging, traumatic life for a lot of the first parts of my life. My life now is fantastic, but my early life had a lot of trauma in it. And what that did, or rather how I took that and what I made that mean for myself, is that I really wanted to control the universe. I wanted to control myself so that I would control the universe to keep myself safe. So it's like my intuition didn't feel safe then. It's like only logic, rigidity, rules, like things like that gave me the illusion of feeling like I was safe. So then it became a conscious process when I realized how, because I was really quite unsafe inside of myself, because I was doing all of that, rejecting the aspects and being mean to myself and being hypercritical of me and all that stuff. So it's like I wanted to feel safe in the world, but the space inside of me was not safe. Like I hadn't built that up inside of myself, the safety I wanted the world to give me, I wasn't giving myself. But it took me a long time to even realize that, let alone start to kind of shift it and change it. There was no one really helping me with it. There was no one I could kind of like bounce it off. So I kind of walked into walls a lot and got a bit confused about, you know, how do you unpack this? What do you do? So it took a really long time, which I think is why, like, I've, you know, created the Return to Wholeness free course. Like I want it to be so much more accessible and less time consuming and less painful and traumatic for people than what it was for me, because it doesn't need to be like that. If you get it, it's actually quite simple, like almost too simple, you know, the fact that if we just genuinely love and accept ourselves and in our actual lives, in the way we interact with ourselves, in how we think about ourselves, in how we talk about ourselves inside of ourselves, like it just changes everything. But it took me a good long while to work that out.
Yeah, I hear that. I have to say, your Return to Wholeness process, I've sent so many people your way.
I love that. Thank you.
But just because, you know, that process and the way that you've done it, I haven't listened to all of the course that you've done, but I've heard you demonstrate how to do it.
Yeah.
And it's really similar to a lot of the NLP kind of stuff that I'm trained in. And I was like, this is really simple. Like, anybody can do this. And
absolutely,
you know, I'm similarly to you, very passionate about people being able to do this themselves, that this really simple but really important information and skill around this kind of emotional reclamation of ourselves is not gate kept and not held behind a paywall, and also that it's not complicated, because I really believe in each person's like ability to heal themselves. And I feel like that's where it starts, is listening to yourself and or every part, and that you can heal yourself from anything. And I really love that process that you've put together.
Thank you. I really love it too. So again, that felt like something I uncovered or discovered. And it is. It's so simple. It's so powerful. It's so quick once you get the hang of it as well. Like I do it in my daily life. It takes me 2 minutes and I just come back from like disharmony to harmony without rejecting the disharmony. And that's where it gets a bit tricky. You know, it's like we were talking before, everyone wants to get to the good feeling. And we tend to think that to get to the good feeling, we have to cut out the bad feeling or go around the bad feeling. But actually the way to genuine, authentic good feeling is to clear up the shit that's standing in the way of us feeling that good feeling. So that's why, you know, turning towards with the Return to Wholeness process or something similar that is kind of, it's like got self-acceptance baked into it. But we can still trick ourselves and think that we're trying to, like, no, I'm accepting my negative emotion. I'm really open to it. But really we're just doing the process to get the fuck away from us. So we can't trick ourselves. Like it's not possible because it's us inside of ourselves. So it also hones in your kind of self-awareness when you keep practicing it and playing with it and seeing if you're not moving, there's lack of acceptance in there somewhere. So the game is to find where the lack of acceptance is. And then when you find it, you get to celebrate yourself because, yay, look at you. You found this hard thing that was trying to hide from you and you were trying to hide it from yourself and you let that go and you let yourself see it. Yay. Like that self-celebratory thing can be so powerful and it's so underused.
Yeah, 100%. I notice now, like there's two things. When a negative feeling comes up, I ask myself inwardly, I'm like, are you okay, mate? What's happening? What do you want to say? And just have the little conversation. I mean, I'm getting better at this. I'm not claiming that can do this all the time. But I still have moments where I get irritated because I was taught when I was little that big feelings are inconvenient and annoying.
Yes.
So the first thing that I'm doing is acknowledging it and going, okay, you're here. What do you want to say? And try not to be like exasperated or a dickhead to that part of myself. And the other thing is that I've started to notice that when I'm going through quote unquote negative feelings, it actually brings out different sides of me that I really enjoy. So for example, I know that when I'm in the depths of despair, that's often when I'm funniest. And, you know, I'm most likely, I've composed songs sporadically since I was about 6 or 7 years old. And I might not compose one for a few years, but I can guarantee that if I'm feeling really crap or especially heartbroken, I'm more likely to write something. So I've started to make these positive associations of things that I might not want to feel the feeling or go there or go through like a horrible experience. But I kind of bribe myself with, well, if you stick with it, though, don't forget in those moments, there are these little things that will happen that don't happen any other time. So I kind of, it's a bit like a lunar eclipse. I'm like, this doesn't happen a lot, but when it does happen, there'll be something magical in there. So it's worth it. Like, go for it anyway. So I'm beginning to kind of bribe myself. And one of my very good friends said that, she said, a breakup is great for when you want to lose a couple of pounds and go back to the gym.
Yeah.
And she's right. So, yeah, it's a skill. But I also think there's like this coaxing that goes on, isn't there? Of like, come on, you know, let's do.
At the start there is. And then I think what happens is the process proves itself to you. And it gets easier and easier to accept. Like, it's so natural for me now to accept it, but I've been doing this for like a really long time. And I have learned by seeing it again and again and again and again and again a thousand trillion times that if I turn towards what feels a bit shitty, like I come out the other end of it feeling so much better than before. Like, it makes me better. Like, my feeling inside of myself is bigger. Like, my consciousness is expanded. And so, like, big feelings aren't scary to me anymore the way they used to be when I used to repress them. Because, like, when you repress a feeling, it's like it pushes back because it's always coming up, right? And so you have this kind of thing going and it's exhausting. We don't realize how much energy we're using trying to, like, press it down, and it's continuously kind of pushing up. And so when you're in that situation and you first touch the negative emotion, it feels like it can eat you alive, but it's because it's having to have so much force to try and push through our resistance. But once you stop that pattern of resisting, 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 it doesn't have to grab you by the shoulders and shake you in the same way. It, like, sometimes my feelings are still big, but it's like they're more manageable, not because I'm managing them, like I'm not controlling them, but because they don't have to, like, shake me or slap me to get me out of my repression mode. It's much, 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 much easier. So, yeah, at the start, you could have kind of coax yourself because you probably feel slightly unsafe still. It feels a bit icky or weird or wrong to, like, move towards the bad instead of the good when it's been so trained into us. But I feel like you get to a level of momentum where it just starts to grow kind of naturally. You look forward to kind of turning towards rather than, because it creates flow, like it creates movement, it creates space. And once we know that in our own experience over and over and over again, the fears or the resistances we have end up just dropping away without having to do any fucking mindset work about it. It's easier.
Yeah, definitely. I've noticed actually that I feel like more and more I'm really appreciating the real genuine value of those like less than pleasant things.
Yeah.
And it's really interesting because somebody might say to me, oh, you know, are you not excited about that or whatever? And I might just be honest and say no. And they're like, okay, what do we need to do to make it exciting for you? And I'm like, why do you want me to be excited? They're like, oh, wouldn't you prefer to be excited? I was like, no, I just want to feel how I feel. Like, and I'm fine with it. If you're uncomfortable, then I'm not changing for you.
Yeah.
So I'm sorry, but, you know, and I find that now I'm mostly dealing with other people being uncomfortable with my, like, quote unquote, negative experiences. So in a way, it feels like I've graduated and now I'm like, oh no, now I've got to tell these people to stop making a fuss.
Yeah, they're going to have whatever bloody reaction they have based on their filters, because most of us resist, you know, it's like, oh, don't cry. Like that whole thing when we're, you know, growing up, it's like, well, if you need to cry, just bloody cry. Like it's like an allowing. This is the other thing that's really interesting to me that I've discovered. When we allow ourselves to express naturally inside of ourselves and we're open to ourselves, the capacity we have for deep, profound connection with other people multiplies like by a factor of thousands. Because then we're being our genuine natural selves inside of ourselves. We are more capable of doing that in the world. And so relationships get more real. Yeah. They get more pure. They get more connected because we're not filtering through all of the bullshit dances we think we need to do to get them to smile at us and love us and be happy. We're just being ourselves and we're loving them and we're open to receiving their love. And it changes everything. Like there's so much more authenticity in it.
Yeah, so much. I think the level, it's really interesting because all of the level of friendships and connection I have with people that I've made friends with later on in my life now contrast a fair bit to the people that I'm still in contact with from like my old life. Not to say that they're better or worse, but just that the quality is very different.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing that's really funny, funny in the way that we humans just are kind of weird and hilarious, is that I feel like there's a lot of people out there who want to be authentic in their relationships, who want to be really deeply connected, but they're kind of trying to do that with people in their outside world and not working on the stuff inside of themselves where they're not authentic and genuine with themselves, where they're not connected to themselves. And it's like, we can't ask the universe to give us experiences that we're not willing to do for ourselves.
Yes.
And so if you know, if you're someone who loves authentic, genuine connection, and, you know, people drawn to this probably would be, then, you know, take some time to really assess what's going on inside of you and the places where you're not honest with yourself, where you try and pretend that all your thoughts are positive and really there is doubt and fear, where you try and pretend that you don't feel jealous of that friend who got that thing or resentful of that other person that you helped and they didn't help you. Like all of that stuff that we feel, it's there for a reason and it's showing us something. And once we start to be honest with ourselves, Oren said something different. They said, we're not going to say be brutally honest. We're going to say be candidly honest. So it's not brutal. You're not coming down hard on yourself. There's no inner violence. But being really, truly honest about the things we're hiding from ourselves inside of ourselves and the ways we're rejecting ourselves inside of ourselves and splitting ourselves, which is like the opposite of connection. If we're wanting authentic connection outside, we got to do the work inside or else it's always going to be diminished. It's going to be like a watered down version of what's possible.
Yeah, definitely. And I've talked about this before other times, but I'm a recovered codependent or recovering codependent, depending on how you look on it. And I notice I can see very clearly that in my days that I used to completely donate myself to another human being for whatever they needed, and then being frustrated of like, well, why aren't they doing the same to me? Why do they not, you know, I think like in my head, what I thought was like happiness and connection was actually total enmeshment where you two are fused as like one being and there's no, you know, it's very unhealthy.
Yes.
But, you know, I used to think to myself, like, why are these people not kind of treating me, you know, like I would see people on TV or people that I knew being treated very, very well by their partners. And obviously now I can see that it's because I didn't prioritize myself whatsoever. So sure enough, nobody else did either. Yeah. And, you know, and I've had friends in recent times who are kind of going through this realization themselves. And it's so weird because I think like years on, you can see it really clearly. But when you're in it, there's just this sense of like, I'm sure things are supposed to be better than this.
Yeah.
But there's no, you don't know that. You only know that intuitively. And it hasn't happened yet. Have you ever had, or has Oren ever had words about like recovering from codependency or anything along those lines?
They haven't used those words exactly, but I think that's part of what they're teaching is for all of us because we're all partly codependent. So yeah. So what they've explained, and this is what came through the first time they came, actually, when my friend asked, why do we struggle to love ourselves? They went into this really detailed thing that I think is so helpful. I had never thought of it like that, but once I heard it, it's obvious. So I'm going to say it. So they say that we all children come in fully connected to their self-worth and their self-love and the feeling that they're like the center of the universe and they should have everything that they want, right? Which is why they'll have a tantrum if they can't have ice cream for dinner because they can't conceive of the fact that you're saying no to them. Why would you? They deserve all the things. So we all come in like that. And then gradually we start to notice that certain behaviors we do make people around us smile, which looks like love. And then other behaviors that we do make people frown and it looks like they withdraw love. And then at the start, like kids will have tantrums and go, I hate you. And then still expect to be cuddled afterwards, right? Like they don't feel like saying I hate you makes them unlovable. It's not a thing. But like after an experience and another and another and another and another and another, where we notice this behavior makes them smile and make us feel loved, and this behavior makes them angry at us and it makes us not feel loved, we start to slowly drop our connection to our own worth and try and exchange for the feeling of being loved and worthy on the outside. So we try and do the dance that creates the smiles. And as that happens more and more, we disconnect more and more with our feeling of self-love and self-worth and kind of guide ourselves by who do we need to be to create that result in the outside world. The more we do that, the more we have to like disconnect from aspects of ourselves. So it becomes this vicious cycle of addiction that we're doing the thing out here so that we get the reward out here. And I think that's how most of us live, and it's codependent to the fuck, but like we just think it's normal. And it's not until we start to get clear and untangle it and start to rewire our inner connection to our own self-love and our own self-worth that we can genuinely let go of the addiction to it from the outside. Because you can't ask yourself to give up your addiction from the outside without replacing it with something. Mm. That's not self-loving or self-self. That's not reasonable. And so that process of building that up on the inside, I feel like, is the antidote to that enmeshment that we have with other people, because we are subconsciously having an unwritten contract that we think that they've signed, that if I do this for them, they'll do that for us. And then everyone's like in bondage. But you can't free yourself out here. You have to like free yourself in here. Give yourself the resources here that will allow you to stop white knuckling the grip over that person.
I love that. Yeah, that's so cool. It was really interesting because I made a realization recently that I was feeling really good about where I was. I was like, I've done loads of healing. I've been through trauma therapy twice. It wasn't that I thought I was done. I just realized that I'd got to a place where I was like I felt quite functional and happy. And I was like, okay, so moving forward from here, I'm going to continue to do these things that are working for me. And I want to maintain the status quo. I didn't realize that that's what I was thinking, or that was my attitude. And then I met somebody who I liked, and I was like, oh no. And I haven't been in this situation for like such a long time. I haven't even been involved with somebody in any sense for this long, for nearly 10 years. And I felt like my guardian angel or whoever, there was a whole load of them laughing at me and pointing and going, you thought you thought you had it all sorted, and you were sort of like, oh, you know, the playing field had leveled out and like you'd kind of made it in a sense. And then they just sort of threw this hand grenade in, and they're like, now you've got to learn to communicate and you're going to expand again. I was like, oh, I've just done so much of that.
Yeah, I think of it like this, because it feels better to think of it like this for me. So there's no limit to the expansion. Like, there's no limit to how amazing and how magical and how awesome it can be. And I think of it like this as well. So I feel like we're here, right? So I'm standing here at this point in my life right now, and there's more awesomeness for me to have. There's no limit to that, right? So, but I'm here. The more awesome is sitting here. So something is standing in the way of me being here. Otherwise, I would already be here, right? So there's something here. And so life and the universe and our energy field and our consciousness conspire to show us what's here. They show us what's here. And then we deal with it. And that can be hard work. And so we deal with it. We get to here. And then we acclimatize here. If we're lucky, we get to catch a breath. And then we realize that there's this bit here on the way to this level of awesomeness. And so I feel like there's no limit to that. There's always going to be more you can go to, which means there's always going to be more little things to clean up between where you are and where it's possible for you. So I like that way, rather than thinking the work never ends, which is an exhausting thought that makes me want to like squish down my body and like going down in the feed position. Whereas if I think there's no limit to how amazing it can be, then I get excited.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
But also, sometimes you need to put your fucking feet up and just not do spirituality for a while. That's sometimes the most efficient and healthy thing we can do for ourselves. So I'm all for that.
That's true. Well, you've had some time off this year, haven't you? How's that been after, you know, everything's been so intense on the spirituality and channeling for a while, and then you've had these breaks?
Well, I think of it as not separate, actually. So I've had health issues for like 2.5 years and quite debilitating. Like I get these atrocious headaches, have to go to bed, my eyes have got all of these issues, it's hard for me to be on the computer for a long time, lots of things going on. And I feel like it's not like separate to my spirituality and my life. And I was actually just reading a post before that came up on Facebook. I wrote it a while ago, but it just came up. And I had forgotten about it. So I also consume my social media as a consumer because I forget the things that I wrote ages ago and someone else schedules it for me. So just this morning, there was a post on there and it was me talking about having channeled Auron to work out why the hell I'm having so many eye problems, like so many health issues. And I'd forgotten about this, but this morning I read it and it said, Auron said, because I'm so used to putting effort and will into my action in the world. And what I want to be is I want to be someone who stands for miracles, magic, and flow. And that's really who I want to be. And there are ways that my engagement with the world, because I came from that unsafe trauma space, it was too forceful and too rigid and too pushy. And although that's improved a lot, there are still heaps of places where that could improve. So over the last 2 years, I've still kept my business going, but I've brought it down a lot. Like I've done no group programs. It's much smaller because I don't want a lot of demands on my system because of the health issues. And so Auron said basically that in my non-doing, I've been percolating in the energy of just being for 2 years, way more than I ever have in my life. And that if my health issues were resolved like that, I've still got too much momentum of pushing, and I would just, if my eyes were resolved, I'd go back to overworking. I'd go back to being rigid. I'd go back. I haven't like embodied that flow, freedom state in being whilst doing. Like I'm used to either I'm sitting there doing my meditation, practicing my being, or I'm doing stuff. Like they weren't harmonized. And so this whole thing for me has been really about learning to be and to act with ease instead of with the intense act of will, which is how I've engaged with the world for like a really long period of time. So that's something that I'm going much, much, much deeper in. And I feel like I'm getting much more easeful in my relationship with the world, which I wouldn't have done if I hadn't been stopped by health issues for 2 years. Like I just would have kept barreling around like, because that's what I knew. And it had worked pretty well, to be honest. So it wasn't as delightful and delicious and as pleasant and as enjoyable. And it means that I wasn't following the breadcrumbs that lead me to miracles all the time. Whereas when I'm really open and really relaxed and really kind of flowing with the feeling of, wow, this feels so right, I'm going to take this step, even though I have no idea what the next step is. Before, I used to need insurance that I would be safe before I was going to take a step. So I would need to know like the outcome or what the next 4 steps were going to be before I'm willing to take this one right here. Whereas now I can, it'll be all right. I'll be fine. Things work out well for me. But that's taken some consciousness. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. I relate to that. When I was younger, if I was going out somewhere and I've not been there before, I'd have to know what time it was on until I would usually choose to drive rather than drink. I'd have to be in control of when I left. I had to have all of the details like well ahead of time. Someone rang me on the day and said, do you want to come out later? The answer was 99% of the time was absolutely not.
Yeah.
I'd rather, you know, something horrible. But and now... There's so like I do it occasionally if it's something that I'm going to find super challenging from a sensory perspective, or I'm really overwhelmed at the thought of it, then I might do a bit of planning beforehand. But the majority of the time I turn up and only in a work meeting this morning, they were asking me, one of my colleagues was saying, "Oh, so is this what we're going to do today?" And asking me all these things. I said, "Listen, my job was to get here and I'm here. So I don't know any more than that. We'll find out." And she was like, "Oh."
Yeah.
So disappointed. I was like, "It's going to be how it's going to be." And I think that I've got to a point of surrender with most of this like day-to-day stuff, that all of my mates who aren't there yet, I drive them absolutely mental. They want to vent or practice their frustration with me. And I'm like, "I can see that I want to empathize. I can see that you're really upset by this." I'm like, "Yeah, I am." But then at some point they'll say, "You know, would you feel upset in that situation?" I'm like, "I'm sorry, no." "I'm sorry, no. I wouldn't even think about it." I've got one friend, and if she's got to do a journey, she'll know, "Oh, well, there's some national thing on that day, or there's going to be a football match, so I better leave like slightly earlier than normal, don't you think?" And I'm like, "I wouldn't think any of that. I would really believe that I would get there when I'm meant to get there, and beyond that I would just be thinking about what audiobook or music I wanted to play in the car. That's about as far as it goes."
It takes, though, I think, a certain level of safety inside of yourself before you can be as surrendered as what you are, as opposed to your friends, though. Like, I think that really genuinely comes from that relationship of safety, because it's like you're trying to ameliorate potential problems and solve them before they happen. It's like a stress anxiety state. Like, I remember it. I remember having to have my list of things that I was worried about, because worry felt like insurance, because if I was worried, then I'd be prepared.
Yeah.
You know, like, it 100%. Made a logical kind of sense to me, but it took a lot of building that feeling of like, you know, things do work out well for me. I've got my own back. I can trust myself. I'm resourceful. Like, building that as a feeling rather than as an idea I would think in my head, was a massive catalyst for me to be able to surrender more and more and more. Because it's like in the healings, when you asked me about how I learned to channel, and I said through the healings, I had really built up the skill set of being so allowing and so amazingly extraordinary, flowing and intuitive in sessions, but my life wasn't always like that. It was like a category at which I was like a ninja at surrender, and the rest of my life I was like, you know, grade 3, grade 4. So it's being able to transfer that skill set to the other areas that has given me a really sort of solid basis for myself, so that things are less scary now. I don't feel like the rug's ripped out from under me as easily. Like right now, so my dad's just been diagnosed with a really aggressive form of brain cancer. His treatment starts this afternoon, and that has been scary, and it's been stressful, and it's been really, really full on. But I genuinely feel like I've stayed on my feet. Like, energetically, emotionally, I bawled my eyes out, grieving heaps, like processing all of the emotion of it, not trying to pretend the bad stuff isn't happening. But I feel like that inner resilience and safety that I have built from having my own back, from like, if I need to cancel a session because I'm just too sad, I'd just cancel the session. Like, I've got no hesitation in reorganizing my day to support myself generally, let alone specifically now where I'm dealing with something really, really full on. And I know I'm dealing with this really differently now than I would have 10 years ago, like wildly different. So I'm not like constantly looking over my shoulder and thinking, what do I need to do? Like, I'm doing the steps I need to take as I need to take them. But it's like, I feel like that safety inside of myself is therefore the filter through which I'm looking at this really fucking stressful, shitty situation. And it makes it much more easy to handle. Doesn't mean it's easy, but it's not as traumatic. Like, I don't feel like it's adding trauma to my world. I feel like I'm actually using it to clear out old trauma rather than adding whole bunches of more stressful trauma energy to my experience.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And yeah. What, if you are happy to share, like, what traumas, or maybe an example that you have found during this time that you weren't expecting, or...
So when I say I feel like I'm clearing out all traumas, I had an abusive alcoholic mother who did not love me but loved my brother. That's not fair. She did love me, but from her wounds, she would like attack me and you know say stuff like, "I wish you were never born. You're the worst thing that ever happened." But she like adored my brother. So that was quite difficult because like the idea that I had that I was responsible for the entirety of the universe. Like my mum told me everything was my fault. So you know that happened. I've also had like health issues. I was involved in a cult. I was involved in an abusive emotional relationship. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that my system has kind of held onto this like feeling of I'm not safe. It's I'm on my own. So I'm responsible for everything. And I'm not safe. That's kind of the feeling that I've carried all the time. And I feel like with this thing with dad, I wear one of these tracker Fitbitty things and it measures my heart rate and my stress level. And just the week before dad got diagnosed, I felt like I went into this like inner purge of anxiety and out of nowhere, like nothing was going on. Nothing was very different in my world, but I felt like a tiger was chasing me. Like I was so stressed and the physiological emotion experience and sensations I was having were so intense that I rang a friend crying going, "I don't know if I can handle this." And my friend goes, "You're really strong and resilient as fuck and you're going to be fine." I'm like, okay, thanks. I needed to be reminded. But it was, my heart was racing rate and my measurer thing went crazy. For about a day and a half, it's like I couldn't sleep. I couldn't rest. I was so agitated. But when that cleared, I felt like I went and like a whole chunk of heavy shit of like life and death trauma, kind of survival stress. Felt like it dropped out of my system. So that was before dad got diagnosed. Then dad got diagnosed. It's been like 3 or 4 weeks of really crazy stuff with my dad. Since then, I felt like I've done that process a couple more times where my body feels like it's just clearing out old survival stress. So I don't feel like I'm stressing about my dad dying and then adding more stress to my system. I feel like sometimes I have thoughts about dad not being here. It's like the doorway opens and my old stress feels like it's like filing out of my system. That's what it feels like.
Such a different experience, right, to what we're used to hearing.
Yeah. Yeah, because I hadn't even thought about it. But, like, if I had thought about it, I would imagine that this would add more stress and trauma to my world. But that's not what feels true. So it's like I discovered that it's happening this way and it's way better. I vote for this.
That's amazing. Maida, thank you so much for joining me today and having this conversation and sharing all of your amazing wisdom. It's been
my pleasure. It was really fun.
Yeah, thank you. If people want to come and find you, where can they find you?
Well, I'm just releasing a Substack newsletter, which is going to have the free version is going to have all the things that you need. It's going to be called Great Things. Because I'm going to be writing great things and sending out great things. And it's got, I really care about keeping all of this stuff light and joyous and playful, like the importance of that for us as grown-ups who are doing personal development, sort of spiritual work is so misunderstood, I think, like the value of it and what it brings. So I write newsletters. They're kind of like stories with cartoons. And the biggest compliment I've gotten was someone said to me recently, "You're writing to me about your dad's cancer diagnosis and it's bringing me so much joy and delight with your cartoons." And I nearly cried from happiness because I feel like even the shit stuff can be the great things, you know, like even the shit stuff we can laugh through, we can have like a lighter attitude towards. So I send newsletters that have got, you know, like cartoons and messages and all that sort of stuff, which I absolutely love. And that's at greatthings.substack.com.
Nice. Thank you.
I'm on all the socials as well as Auron and Maida, Auron and Medha. So Auron's a collective I channel and Maida's me.
Nice. Thank you. I will also put a link to your website, which has got your free return to wholeness process on there as well in the show notes.
Thank you. Yeah, I would love the whole world for anyone who's interested for that to be like freely available. So it's manageable. Like it's not a big overwhelming course because it's a, you know, free thing. It doesn't come with support, but it's enough for people to get a sense from lots of different angles about how to start working with the process. And I genuinely credit that process with having like changed my life dramatically. So when I said to you, the biggest transformation I've had from Auron is from consuming the material and putting it into action, I'm talking largely about doing the return to wholeness process, which is, you know, where you actually start to learn to accept your emotions and be there for yourself and become your best supporter and start to build that sense of safety inside of ourselves. So then you walk into places already feeling safe.
Yeah.
And worthy and deserving and important and like you're worth prioritizing and valuable and all those delicious things that we're trying to get the outside world to give us without us giving it to ourselves.
Yeah, 100%. And just for the listeners, I've recommended this course to like so many people at this point, including like trauma survivors, all sorts of different people, people who've got like long-term depression, anxiety, you know, people who've got like recurring emotional problems that they just don't know how to deal with. And it's so simple, but so important. And I can't recommend it enough. It's such a valuable resource.
That means a lot. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
That's a pleasure. Thank you so much for today, Maida.
Pleasure.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed it or found it insightful, please leave me a review and share it with others. You can find the Transsection podcast on social media or go to mooksharrishill.com/transsection to sign up to our mailing list. See you next time.